Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Local Voter Education Program. Our guest tonight, running for Tarrant County Judge, is Byron Bradford. Before we know it, March 1st will be here, and that is Election Day. It is right around the corner. We at Local Voter Education do not tell you who to vote for. We are hoping that we can be helpful to you in making the right choice. But we will share a list of candidates that we do not support. Like Manny Ramirez for County Commission Precinct 4. Betsy Price for Tarrant County Judge. And all of Fort Worth City Council members and mayor, in May 2023, if not sooner. And with that, here is your host, James H. McBride.
How you doing, folks? Welcome to another Sunday evening edition of the Local Voter Education Podcast, done for you from 8 to 9 p.m. here on blogtalkradio.com. In addition, you can find this podcast and other pertinent information about Tarrant County and Fort Worth politics at fwdistrict5.com. My name is James H. McBride. I am your host for this evening. I wanted to also let everybody know, if y'all tried to tune in last week, about the problems that we had, that we are back to our normal. Our phone line will be the same this week. It's going to be 515-602-9610. You can press 1 to get in the queue if you want to have any questions for our guests we're going to have on here. Before we bring on the guests, I want to kick it over to the man running the switchboard, as always, Bob Willoughby. I don't know if you wanted to say anything about what was going on in next week or anything of that nature.
Well, Brian, there's a little bit going on. I mean, I don't know if we've really gone off in the twilight zone or not in the city of Fort Worth here, but our, I mean, people probably know this, our newly elected council members and mayor has only been in office about 8 months, and the first 6 months they took away our First Amendment, our right to speak at city council, and from doing that wore them out, and they think they deserve a raise now. Council wants a $50,000 raise, and the mayor wants a $70,000 raise for taking away our First Amendment. And as crazy as things are, I'm not so sure it's them that's crazy asking this. What's going to be crazy is if they get it. And that'll show that they're not that crazy to ask for it. We're out of our minds to let them get it or even let them stay there. But anyway, that's kind of you know, interesting there. So we'll see what happens down the road here with that. So, James, I'll turn it back over to you.
Okay. I also wanted to remind everybody that our podcast next week on the 20th, we will start at 7 p.m. and go from 7 to 8 with Tim O'Hare, and then have our regularly scheduled guest on from 8 to 9 p.m. Is that correct, Bob?
Yes, and our guest for that night would be Lieutenant Governor. His name is I think it's Arson Sorrells, or S-O-R-R-E-L-L-S. How you pronounce that last name, I'm not sure. I can't pronounce it. Anyway, he's running for Lieutenant Governor, and he'll be on 8 to 9, and like James has said, Tim will be on 7 to 8. And the third time's charm. We've had some problems. We've been trying to get Tim on for the last several weeks, and it's not Tim's fault. It's ours, from misbooking and some scheduling, and then we got him on and technical problems. But he's hanging in there with us, and he's coming back on again. So third time will be charm. We should have him on for sure on the next show. So anyway, I thought I was through, James. Now I'm through. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. Tonight we're going to have on one of his opponents. It is going to be Byron Bradford, who is running for the position of Tarrant County Judge on the Republican ticket in the primary coming up. His background is in education. He's got an associate's degree from Central Texas College. He's got his Bachelor of Science in Business Administration from Tarleton State University in Central Texas. And then in addition to that, a Master's in Business Administration from Webster University. He is also a 29-year veteran retired from the United States Army, where he served as an artilleryman. I can't speak either, Bob. Chemical specialist, recruiter. And right now, he is currently the CEO of B12 Management Group. Byron, are you on the line?
Thank you for having me on tonight.
Okay. Have we got young Brian?
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on tonight. Okay. I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, thank you. Glad you could join us this evening. I've done a little bit of a brief introduction about you. Do you want to go ahead and kind of give us a little bit more about you?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I joined the Guard. I'm a native Texan. I joined the Guard in high school through a friend of mine that was in JROTC. That's how I got into the military arena. I joined the Guard at 17. I went off to summer and basic training at Fort Jackson. I came back and I finished my senior year at Clean High School, where I lettered in football. Played, I was an all-state linebacker there. I decided Division I ball wasn't for me. I decided to go military full-time. So I ended up leaving the Guard, going to do active duty. I switched over to our field artillery at that point and went to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, where I became an artilleryman. Then I went down to Fort Benning, Georgia, where I jumped out of planes. I got my 5 jumps out of Bragg. Well, out of Benning, I thought I was done. However, they said, no, you're going to be stationed at Fort Bragg, 82nd Airborne Division. And so I ended up in 82nd. Doing it about a month and a half later, I ended up in Desert Desert Storm. So that was it. And I went from there to Oklahoma. I did a tour in Korea, came back to Fort Hood, did a tour there, and I left the military briefly, not left totally, didn't break a service, but I went back to college, Clark State University, there in Killeen. Finished up there. I went back active in 07 from the Guard where I was recruiting. Went back in and went to Fort Bliss, where I became a 13 Romeo, no longer field artillery, but 13 Romeo, where I stayed there until I retired. I done several other jobs at the division level, one of those jobs, two of them, the EOA, Equal Opportunity Advisor, as well as SART, a sexual assault response coordinator, while I dealt with human trafficking, and I gave a lot of classes and taught people how not to become a victim of sexual assault. But and then I retired in 2016. I got a call from a party saying would I consider running for an office in a different county, not where I'm at now. So I knew nothing about politics, to be honest, when I was in the military. We just did our job and served under whatever president just had a job to do. Got it done. But again, this party had called me to run, done a research, and I felt like it was a good fit for me. So I tried it. I lost that first race by 2%. And that's when I realized people are just unaware and don't know. I didn't know myself. But another fire lit in my heart to, you know, become a lifelong learner and educate as many people as I can, but also get involved in this process myself, because it is really broken, as we can see. And we need good leaders to step up and start taking our country back as far as leading our citizens in the right direction.
I always enjoy when we get on the podcast here, gentlemen and women of you that have served our country and kept us free and everything. I was just curious, out of all the deployments you had, what was the worst one and what was the best one, and why was each one that?
Well, I think the very first one, the PFC, and we went to Desert Storm in Saudi Arabia. We lived in the desert. We didn't have any, you know, we didn't have any running water. Of course, you adapt and overcome. To be honest, all the deployments were good because I didn't lose anybody. So for me, they were all good because all my guys came home. And so I didn't have a bad experience, I think, you know, so I don't have to take that with me to my grave, thank God. But I just try to had a couple of situations where, you know, some guys been deployed multiple times together. And sometimes you could be deployed for a year with somebody and you just rub each other the wrong way. And so I was new to the unit. They already been deployed a couple of times together. And so they actually got into a physical altercation downrange. Like, you know, and I just, and what I did with those two gentlemen, I actually had them do a, I used conflict resolution. I had both of them draw PowerPoints and tell me why that's not good what they did. And once I'd done that, the rest of the platoon was able to see that, you know, we have to work together, regardless how long we've been together or whatever. We don't like this or that. We have a mission to do, and we can't be fighting each other. We have to figure it out. So as a leader, we have to have different types of methods to get people to get along, even though we have other stresses going on in our lives. So that method of conflict resolution actually worked for me, and those gentlemen never had another. I never had any other problems with that platoon again.
Now, as far as you talked about, you do have a political background in running in campaigns before. Something that was interesting to me in doing research on this, Byron, was in your first campaign, you ran as a Democrat. In this one,
correct,
you're running as a What made your change in ideology, and what is the biggest difference you see right now?
It really was, again, when I was serving, remember, I retired in 2016. So I got a call in 2017. So I really hadn't had an opportunity to develop an ideology. All I knew was when somebody called you to help, you help. And so I learned, like, okay, that was not a good thing, but I was able to finish the process. And coming out the other side of that tunnel, what I realized is I wasn't a Democrat. Because I had friends on both sides, and I realized I wasn't a Democrat, and my values and my family chains were very conservative. But I knew at that point I was not that. So that's what I learned from that process. So I wouldn't have known that if I didn't run in that race.
Well, Father, that brings me to the next question. I mean, we see record numbers of people of color that are changing parties right now at this point in time. Why do you think we're having such a big shift in the ideology?
I don't know if it's an ideology again. I think people, as a man of color growing up in Texas, I seen all my family voting Democrat. You know, I never voted Democrat. I actually voted for Ross Perot in the 90s. I voted independent, always identified independently. And I've always been an independent. If you've done research on me again, you would have seen initially I was going to file to run for governor as an independent. You've seen that. But I didn't because I did not have the infrastructure for that because I realized how difficult that can be and what that looks like on the other end. But my views and values were more conservative, and I could lean that way instead of being on the other side. But as far as I think that's an individual. I can't answer speak for everyone else. But as an individual, for me, I feel like I had more in common with the conservative values of this country and what direction that we need to take to get our country back on the right track.
Well, before we get into your platform, speaking of the governor race, since you were talking about getting involved in it, we see a two-time incumbent here have quite a few people on the Republican side of the ticket that are challenging him. This is kind of an unprecedented thing. What do you think the rumbling is? What is the discourse that the Republican Party has with Greg Abbott?
To be totally transparent with you, I'm on a committee with Governor Abbott to serve the military families. But what I will say is I think people can overstay their welcome, and people won't change at a certain point. I don't think these positions are state or these positions are not built for people to stay 3 and 4 terms. And I think when that happens, I think people begin to lose trust. You know, other things come into play, but I think this is great for democracy, even this county judge race and governor's race, the lieutenant governor's race. It's great to see people now getting involved. And not only for that, we have options now. You know, I think people are realizing we have options. We don't have to take horrible leadership from people. We can actually vote for somebody else. That seat doesn't belong to that person. These seats belong to the citizens of Texas and the citizens of Tarrant County.
So by what you said, I would assume you are in favor of term limits.
I don't think you need term limits. I think people just need to get out and vote people out. Term limits, to me, it's another, you know, we add more government, we add more, you know, stipulations. But no, we just vote them out. If they're not doing the job, if they're being derelict in their duties, vote them out. That's the term limit. You vote them out.
Another topic we talk about a lot on here with politicians is campaign finance. Do you believe there should be reform in campaign finance?
To be honest with you, I'm financing my own campaign. I can speak for me. I'm financing my campaign, and I have some small donors. The campaigning has changed a lot. I don't think it matters how much money you have. I call it sweat equity. I call it, well, this time around, it was freeze equity. I froze my butt off out here talking to people every single day, walking up and down the streets and just finding different locations. Everywhere I go, I'm trying to brand myself, whether I'm at a store or grocery store getting gas, I'm constantly giving out some type of literature. And people will say, no politician have ever done that. And I tell them, I'm not a politician. I'm a public servant first. I don't even like the word politician because that's not who I am. Since I was 17, I've always been a servant, you know, a servant of Christ and also a servant of the people. So I don't know what a politician looks like. I've seen what they say. And what they said they're going to do, I've seen a lot of those people, and it never happens. So I don't tell people what I'm going to do. I just tell them what the issue is, and I got some solutions. But as a team on the commission's court, we have to work together to do things. Again, in the commission's court, it takes at least 3 votes to get anything through. So You know, and again, this is a unique situation in Tarrant County because you have two Democrats and two Republicans. The county judge is a swing vote. He can't, you know, I'm not going to toe the party line. I've already said that, and I told them publicly, I'm not toting the party line. I'm going to go what's best for the citizens of Tarrant County. Sometimes I'm going to be the swing vote, and I'm going to have to use common sense when I'm making those decisions with them.
That brings me to your platform. The number one issue you have on your website about your platform is transparency. Byron, what do you see as problems in transparency right now with government in Tarrant County?
Well, I was doing some research here, and I seen an issue back here in 2021, August 27th, dealing with JPS Hospital paying more than $3 million to settle a whistleblower suit. And I was flabbergasted because that's taxpayer money. And I don't think they even know that they paid this. Who's held accountable for this? You know, someone needs to be held accountable, whether it's the county judge at that point or whomever the executives were over there at JPS. It just needs to be more oversight. And I think I did a questionnaire earlier where we need to be, the commissioners need to be more hands-on. We can't just appoint appointees over there and then turn our back. We need to be hands-on with everything that's going on with JPS because, again, we just invested almost $1 billion in that system over there. So we can no longer just expect someone else to do the job for us. No, we're elected officials. Even though we have appointees, they need to know what we're doing also and make sure they're following the guidelines we have set up, stipulations.
Another issue you have on your platform is for workforce and economic development. How do you plan to get that done, and do you have anything in this process that you think would work to get this done?
Well, I think the first thing we need to do is start investing back in infrastructure. You know, I think remember, $1 billion invested in infrastructure creates 12,000 to 15,000 jobs. A lot of those jobs are middle-class jobs. 61% is construction, 12% is manufacturing, 7% is retail. Those are middle, that's 80% right there of middle-class jobs. I think once we get a grip on that, we can start, especially after the pandemic, we can try to get create the middle class again, or try to, you know, galvanize them a little more than what they are. Utilizing the institutions here, whether it's TCU, UTA, the technical schools here, Tarrant County Community College. Again, we have a JPS coming up here. They're investing this $1 billion into, but we're short on primary care doctors. We need to go out and find good qualified candidates to fill these positions. We don't have any shortages. We don't need shortages when we're trying to operate at an optimal level. So that's one of the first things I want to do is make sure we fix our shortages, number one. And it's easier when it comes to roads also, it's easier to, I'll use an engine as an analogy, it's easier to change the oil and filter than to rebuild an old engine, get a whole other engine. So we need to maintain what we have so we don't have these issues down the line, because they're not going to get better in time. They're only going to get worse.
One of the negative aspects of economic stimulus of the county would be gentrification. We have a lot of people talk about their taxes going up because of this problem happening in their own neighborhood. What do you think should be done to protect these older people that are vulnerable at that point in their life and need some assistance?
Well, I think with the tax property tax rate, they need to challenge the assessment of their taxes. And they can challenge it. They can also appeal it. They have 6 weeks to appeal. It's one more challenge. And they can also see if they qualify for benefits as a senior citizen or a veteran. So we do have things in place that can help alleviate some of those issues, but I think they just need to know that's available. And I just like, you know, only Bud Kennedy said the other day, only 6% of our American population, Americans vote in primaries. I think people don't know that's available to them so they can take advantage of that situation to help their situation.
The next thing you have on there is infrastructure. I know you just touched on it a little bit in the previous answer you've given to us, but do you want to go a little bit more in depth about that?
Well, again, I think if we neglect something, bottom line, our taxes, since 1991, our gas taxes hadn't increased. Yeah, because, but even though gas has increased significantly three times, our gas taxes hadn't increased. So we're still paying minimal percentage, but we're driving more too. So there are more people on the road. But the car, so we have a deficit. It was planners done a study called 2030 study, and they realized we're going to need $188 billion to fix our infrastructure in Texas. Well, the problem is we only have $102 billion. So we're $86 billion short. So how are we going to fix it? Well, that's very complicated. It's not that easy. It's very complicated because with electronic vehicles coming out and cars are being able to travel further on a gallon of gas, that gas tax I talked about earlier, it's not enough to cover. Even if they double it, it's still not enough to cover the shortfall that we have. So it's going to take some people at the state level as well as the county level to sit down and say, it's going to be, again, leading, I told the forum earlier, leading is very difficult. We got to make some hard choices and hard decisions. But if we're going to keep Texas viable, we're going to have to make those decisions, and we need to make them now because I feel like the Texans have been they have been neglected, literally. And that's why our roads look the way they look. I was in Korea for 3 years, and they've had high-speed rail since 97 in Korea when I first went over there. I'm like, why don't we have this in Texas? This is South Korea. They have this, and it's fluid, and it's great. You know, you go one end of Korea to Busan and the other, and that's in, you know, an hour and a half. You know, you from Seoul to Busan. And so we got to figure out, we just have to make the commitment to say, this is what we're going to do, and this is why, and make that decision. I think leaders in Texas, Democrat or Republicans, have been kicking the can down the road. And now you just can't kick the can anymore because now we're maxed out as far as borrowing from the federal government for roads and infrastructure. They've now pushed it off to local and regional leaders to fix the issue. And they still, you know, so no one's talking about it, but I'm doing my research and I'm finding out a lot of things that's just really, it really irks me that they just fraud, waste, and abuse. They call themselves conservatives, but I don't see it. I see fraud, waste, and abuse is what I see.
You talk about infrastructure. We have so many toll roads right now. I mean, would you be for more toll roads coming through here?
Well, I wouldn't be for it. That's one of the, believe me, I get told, I get taxed a lot. But if that's something we have to do to use that, so it's use or lose. If we use it, we have to pay for it. I got it. That's one way to get there. But we're going to have to, multifaceted different methods to do it because there's no one method that's going to fix it.
Now, when it comes to taxes, you talk about the state and the local level. Who do you think has more of a responsibility when it comes to it?
Well, I think the state needs to stop spending so much, honestly. I think the state is spending way too much, and that's why they keep raising taxes. Okay, we stop the state from spending. Guess what? We create a surplus, and we kick that money back to the schools whom we're taxing like crazy. We push it back to the schools, and then the schools can, you know, get out of their pockets. And then eventually, hopefully one day, homeowners can actually own their homes. They're not going to, you know, have to pay taxes. They never fully own the home. I think that's insane. You have a 30-year mortgage, you pay it off, and you're still paying property taxes. I don't agree with that. So at some point, we have to come to a way that homeowners can own their property once it's paid off. And I think that's a state and county effort together that can make that happen. But the state and the legislature need to take the lead on that because that's where it's going to have to start at.
Do you have a plan you're working on that could reduce taxes here in the county?
I do have something I'm looking at right now. I'm going to divulge it. I put a little bit on my website, actually. I have a little blurb there, but I'm definitely going to reach out to that organization when the time is right and so I can sit with them, and I want to know more about their plan because I think their plan is very viable. I think it's doable.
Okay, and is that on your votebyronbradford.com?
Yes, sir. It's on their website there.
Okay. And then one other thing you have on here, too, that was kind of interesting to me is you talk about different penalties for DWI and DUI laws for repeat offenders. I checked all that stuff was done at the state level. How is the district attorney going to enforce that? I was just wondering, do you have a plan for that?
Well, now that they're going to enforce it, I'm going to have to sit down with them and find out what can we do at this level. Who do we need to talk to at the state level to that can help us figure this problem out, this issue out? Because, you know, for people to have 5 DUIs and then someone gets killed the 6th one, I think that's ridiculous. we've seen a pattern of bad behavior. How do we continue to let this person drive, number one, or while they're not in jail, for number two? And then because what I'm noticing is about the fifth time, someone ends up dying eventually. And I understand that's a state issue, but that's something we had a family directly affected here in Tarrant County. I'm like, this is the person's sixth time getting a DUI. Why is he still driving? You know, again, I have other people I'm going to reach out to because I don't know everything, and I'm just drinking this faucet, this water, this fire hydrant as much as I can, but I know I can reach out to other people that are subject matter experts to make sure I'm going down the right path, to make sure we can implement something or talk to the right people to establish some type of, not mandatory, but some type of, not law, but enforce something where this person don't get three chances to kill somebody or get twice. They get something. We have to do something better than what we're doing because it's not working.
And one of the other things you have on your website and something you talk about in your introduction is the passion of yours, the human trafficking issue. We just want to talk about work on what you think can be done to help eradicate that.
Well, I think we need to make people aware of what that looks like. We need to do more PSAs on that so people can be informed that that is actually happening. And after living in Korea for 3 years, I got to see firsthand after giving classes and working with CID on certain issues with the criminal investigation department with the military. I got to see what that looks like and who's affected. You know, it affects males and females, young and old. It's not just sex trafficking. It's also work trafficking. We want to make sure people are not being taken advantage of as well. So I would get with, of course, you know, the district attorney's office, of course, the sheriff's office, and see, you know, I would also probably work with CPS. I have relatives that work with CPS who tell me, you know, once their kids age out of the system, they end up getting into that type of, not business, but that type of criminal activity. And so we want to make sure those kids also they have other options than to go into that type of lifestyle. So we have to do more mitigation. Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
No, we have to do more things to mitigate those kids coming out the CPS system so they don't get into that criminal lifestyle.
Now, next thing I want to ask you is, through all the election cycles you've been through, does the cycle get easier each time or does it get harder each time?
For me, I feel like it gets easier because when I first got into this, I had to learn so much so fast. I mean, I was probably working 20-hour days. I'm working 20-hour days now, but it's a different type of 20-hour days. Initially, when I got into it, I was just sucking in a bunch of information, you know, information. And what I realized is sometimes people don't even want to know the information. They want to know they can trust you. So I still suck in a lot of information, but people now, they just want to know that they can trust me. And I'm going to be honest, since I've been shaking out here, shaking people's hands and going to forums, I've met so many great people, and they realize they know a genuine person when they see one. And I think that's what they love most about my campaign and what we're doing over here on our team. So it's gotten easier. Of course, I be transparent with you, I do have anxiety and depression from just my time in the service, things I deal with. So I overcome those things because it really motivates me to know that I can make a change after my military service. I don't have to wear a uniform anymore. I can still dress as a civilian, and I can still go out here and touch people in a positive way and affect my community.
Bob, I know you like to talk a lot. I was just wondering if you have anything you'd like to say.
Yeah, I saw that coffee. I got to change the decaf. I know that. I thought too much. I'll tell you what, we've got quite a few listeners on board, and no one is pushing in to speak. If you know, if they want to, they can call. I mean, they can push the one on their phone if they have any questions, but yeah. I'd like to go back over a few things that y'all went over to. And first thing, Brian, is did y'all mention, did you get a chance to ask, what city do you live in?
I live in North Richland Hills.
North Richland Hills? Okay. It's probably on your website,
sir.
Everywhere. It's probably out there. Everybody probably knows it but me. Okay, now I know it. Okay, and let's go down here to campaign finance.
It's Northeast Tarrant. North Richland Hills is in Northeast Tarrant County.
Yeah, I know. Tarrant County, I think, is like the third biggest county in the state of Texas, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
But
I'm right near Hearst.
Okay. And then the campaign finance, Brian, what I was talking about. You know, I'm big on contribution limits, and that quit the police association giving hundreds of thousands of dollars to candidates and firefighters and them giving money to candidates when they should be using the money for more legitimate things to serve the whole instead of buying candidates. But I'm real big on that. And also I do think though now I disagree with you. I do think it takes amount of money to do any kind of election according to the size you're running in, the amount of money you need. And for analogy here, I'll give you like a, I don't know if this is a good one or not, as a military term, I can't even speak. And that's why I got a host on here. But you could have the best in a war, the most sophisticated, with all the best firepower, everything. But if it doesn't have gas to move with, which is what I call the money is the gas, it's not going anywhere. So the other army, even with the weakest tank that has a ton of gas, which is the money, can blow you away. And that's what's happening to us. That's where I see it. We're getting blown away by people that shouldn't be in office because, like Maddie Parker, our mayor, got $2 million. That's a lot of gas. And she's full of it, believe me. And but that's why I think campaign country is one of the a necessary thing to change. And as far as voting people out, I like that idea too, but I'm afraid people have been dumbed down by our government not to be involved in local. We have 50% unregistered voters here in Fort Worth. 50% is unregistered. 40% don't vote in the local election, and or that are more don't vote in the local, and that's due to a variety of things. You know, if your parents didn't vote, you don't learn to vote, and also your local government doesn't want you to vote. You know, they don't really include us in anything. So now we got to get our news. Well, they took our right away to speak, and they control all of our local government media, you know. And we got to get it back. Once we did at one time have independent programming on our government channels and stuff too with our government, and that was good. You had a balance. But they took the independent way, like the Women Lead of Voters. They took them off and made a policy, none of that anymore, so that they have full control to keep us dumbing down. So, but that, anyway, then I touched over. Let's go down. Just go ahead, Brian.
I wasn't aware of that, but now that you've you know, put it in context for me, absolutely. I don't agree with that. And as said, yeah, that was a great analogy you gave, reference. You're right. People know I'm there. They know I'm there, and if I can't make them donate the money, I mean, if they want to give, because those, you know, of course, you know, I'm preaching to the choir. You've seen this all along, and I have. Okay, some people are bought and paid for, and I'm not. And I think that's, you're right. They're not going to give me money because I don't fall into their purview or the parameters of what they want to get done. That's just the reality of it.
That's
you can call me an outsider, but the reality of it is I was gone for 30 years defending your right to be free in this country. So I'm not an outsider. I've always been a Texan. No matter where I was at, no matter where I was stationed, my DD-214, my home record says Texas. So even though I was in another country, I was still from Texas. That's why I came back to Texas, and thank God, because we need good people running for these offices, because like you just said, they've hijacked everything, and we got to get good people back in there. And I'm praying that people actually come out, they get excited to get out and vote in this primary, because it's very crucial for Tarrant County. It's very crucial for Tarrant County to get out of the primary and vote.
It is very crucial to start getting people involved. And what we're going to do here is that the good thing, when I start talking, people don't want to hear it, so they start putting their hand up to call. They start getting in the queue that they want to talk after they hear me for a little bit, for sure. So I don't blame them. This is why I start talking, so we get people involved. We do have a caller on the line that does want to speak in, and I'm not going to kill the time up. If we have some more time here, I had a couple of more we'd touch over. But basically, I just kind of want to, you know, this is my chance to get the vent. I can't afford professional counseling, so this is where I do all my venting and that. So,
right.
And what we're going to do is we'll go to the line here, and let's let 1089 in and see what they have to say to you, Ryan. We'll see what they have to say here. This is, do I have you on a caller 1089? Your last four numbers of your phone.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Okay. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Thank you, Mr. Bradford, for taking my call.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Pretty good. Okay, I was listening. I came in a bit late, and I was listening to you conversation, but it said you were a former Democrat. About how long ago was that?
That was 2018.
Thank you for your service, too.
Yes, sir. Did that answer your question?
Sorry,
sir.
I, 2018? Okay.
Yes, sir.
And this is one of the things that I'm skeptical of is when I hear people become Democrats become Republicans, I'm like, gee, did he suddenly become pro-life and pro-small government overnight? I mean, how did you make that change?
Well, I think you missed the part where I talked about I just retired from the active duty army in 2016. So during my military time, I identified as independent. And remember, I got a phone call from a party asking me to run. You know, when you serve the country, you're used to just making things happen. Someone that needs something from you, they need help, you go ahead and answer the call. And what I realized in that process, after I ran, completed the race, I realized that I was not a Democrat probably halfway through the I didn't have a primary, but halfway when I got by November rolled around, I knew that I wasn't a Democrat at that point. So I chose to hit the reset button after speaking with family and friends. They're both Republicans that are Republicans. And we say, you know what, I'm going to hit the reset button because I don't feel like I'm one of them. I don't feel like I'm a Democrat based on my values and things of that nature, what I experienced.
Okay. Thank you for your answer. I appreciate it.
Thanks, sir.
Mm-hmm. Bob, we have any other callers?
Yes.
Okay. Well, James, you got anything you want to come back in on, or are you over there watching the Super Bowl right now?
Do we have any other callers?
We have several listeners in here. I had a few more questions I can go over here again in touch with if you like. But if anything came to mind, James, that you want to jump back in, I'm going to have another cup of decaf here. And then
no, absolutely.
Really
go ahead with your
question. Okay. Well, Brian, one thing.
Yes, sir, I'm here.
One thing you tapped on, I've been saying for a long time. And you said the same thing there. Yeah, I think at a certain time in life, you should be able to own your property, cut the string. I've talked to Dan
Correct.
Patrick before. He was lieutenant governor. We were in several meetings together, and he was saying how he could cut the property taxes, lower them down, and all that kind of good stuff. And I explained in a meeting with him that, yeah, that's good. But things can happen beyond your circumstances. Someone else will be in office, and they go right back up again. So that's no good.
Yeah.
You know. And plus, another thing is that most people are after 65, or I don't know what year to put it at up there. Most of them can homestead, and that cuts it down real low. It does cut it down low. So we're not when you add it up at that rate, what we're taking out that we got to replace, whatever that money was going to, is really not that big of an amount, I don't think, when you add it with the people when they get that age, what they're paying anyway in taxes in. So somehow or another, what you got to do is replace that money, whatever is going. Well, it's probably going to politicians' pockets, no offense, but it's probably going to a lot of places it shouldn't be going. But nevertheless, I honestly believe, and I'm with you on this 100%, there is some way that we can make you tax-free a little bit before you die and own your house for a little while. That would be a nice thing to do, and that would be great.
I think that is the right way to go. I know it's possible. I just have to get in the room with someone smarter than myself and figure it out.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I'm sure there's a way, and I know there's a way. I know the funds that you're taking away by cutting all that fund out, I know that fund can be replaced with other money from other pockets, and I just can't see it being that big because even my, I think ours from mother's, it was like $130 something for the year, so, and sometimes it was like 60, and it's an acre of land and that. But so I don't know how much people's are around the city, but I know when they did the homesteading, it does drop it down to a low amount. And actually, you should be because, you know, they raise it up and down on you, but your Social Security doesn't go up and down with it. It's like robbing
you're
your Social Security money out of your pocket.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're on a fixed income. And that's one of I talk about this at the forums. It's like we're taxing our senior citizens out of their home. They're on a fixed income. My dad is, you know, a certain of age. He's on a fixed income, and he got the Social Security. And thank God his home is paid for, but he got other medical issues. I help him, you know, get around and stuff like that. You know, he's losing his vision. So I'm learning about Medicare A, B, and C, you know, dealing with him in his situation. So I'm like, wow, this is ridiculous. And, you know, he's not in a nursing home. He's able to still be at his house. But you got individuals that live in nursing homes. And I don't want to talk. We have 14,000 nursing homes in Texas. And so the cost for nursing homes can rush up $100,000 a month. $100,000 a month. Who can afford that?
Yeah.
So we have a lot of issues that, you know, that it's not County Judge Lane, but however, we got to find politicians. We got to find public servants that can actually start addressing these needs. So we don't have, because I don't want him to be in a situation like that, or you, or as I get older, we, you know, we could have tackled this thing 20 years ago, and we're still here.
Okay. Well, I agree. You know, the but we got to get the right politicians. We just got to start getting people involved. But, well, that's what we're trying to do here with local voter education. Go ahead. Go ahead, James.
Bob, just jump in here real quick. You know, Byron, one of the things we see, though, is a lot of times we see politicians, they come up there in front of you and they say, hey, look, we lowered your property taxes, but the home evaluations continue to go up, and it doesn't counterbalance. I mean, what is there to do to counterbalance this problem?
I would tell people to always challenge the assessment. Because the problem is people are not challenging. But if enough people challenge, that can help alleviate some of that. They're going to get the money from somewhere else. They're going to get the money. But they're going to get it from somewhere else. They won't get it from you. But if you're not fighting and screaming and kicking, they're going to just take it. They're going to, you know, if you're fighting and screaming and kicking, they're going to leave you alone. You're going to challenge. You're going to take their time. But they give you 6 weeks to do that with their tax appraisal board. When that time comes around, you go sit there with them. You got 6 weeks to go challenge that assessment. And we need more people to start, again, getting engaged, taking advantage of that, you know, and making sure they're being treated properly and fairly.
Would it be fair to say that's something you do on a yearly basis?
On a yearly – I couldn't hear your question.
I said, would that be fair to say that's something you do on a yearly basis?
Yes, of course. Because they'll go up every year. So you have to fight them every single year.
Okay. Go ahead, Bob.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll tell you one thing we can move down on to. Here's one other thing you touched on that – something I mentioned a long time ago, and I caught some slack about this. You were talking about the DUIs, which, something needs to be done, especially when your council member can get drunk and have a DUI and run for Congress afterwards, too, and probably get elected. But I was thinking that it would go for speeding tickets as well, but DUI and stuff like this, I don't know how much it'll work on DUIs. Alcoholics have a problem sometimes, and they keep drinking, but speeding tickets anyway to make the highways a little bit safer. With even with a DUI, any kind of citation, if you're mentally, physically able to, there should be automatically incorporated a day or two of picking up trash off the street. And the reason I say that is because a speeding fine to a person of an income of $500 a week, that may be 25-30% of their pay. And a speeding ticket to a person the same speeding ticket, whatever, to a person that's making $5,000 a week is a fraction of the pay, so they don't feel the sting. But in this case, it would make the penalty fair, and it would also help clean up our streets if these people had to get out and pick up trash, including our congressman or whatever. Mark Vesey, he's in healthy shape. He got caught speeding. He needs to spend a day picking up trash out there and putting back, you know. I think that would help slow people down in our area if we inflict. And the same thing with alcohol, with drinking. You and I, you can pick up trash for a couple of days on the street, they'll go somewhere else and drink and drive. No, I'm sorry, I don't know. But anyway, I always thought our rules were kind of unfair just by a fine in a way, because a person on a lot higher income doesn't feel the penalty the same as a person on a low income, if that makes sense. So I'd like to balance it out.
It makes great sense, actually. And I think when I think about that, I think about the humility aspect of it, because sometimes people get in certain positions, they think they're above that. And I think when you break the law, you know, there should be consequences to that, and it shouldn't be financial. It should be something that humble you a little bit. So paying a $500 fine for something, that doesn't humble you, because you know you got the money. It's no big problem. But for somebody that doesn't make that kind of money, he has a, you know, he's not going to pay a light bill. Maybe it's a car note or something like that. So, no, I agree with that. You know, maybe 8 hours of just trash, picking up trash on the side of the road with that same guy.
And clean up our city at the same time. You know, we could put up signs saying that we welcome speeders here. We welcome them because we got some more trash to pick up. You know, so
sure.
I would think it was a good idea, I thought, or something of that nature. And that's, you know, there's a chef's set of rule if they're, you know, age-wise, handicapped, or anything like that, sure. But, yeah, that was something I always, that's something I thought about a long time, just wanted to bring that in. Okay, I think I've about almost covered most everything here I wrote down here to kind of go back over with you there, Brian. James, I'm at a loss now. There's all my four brain cells used up right there.
And no, you're fine. And, you know, Bob, I
think have one other question
just came to mind,
though. I did have another question that came up real quick here. Brian, I don't know if this got discussed before or not, but what does the county judge, what do you actually rule over? What comes before a county judge? What kind of cases, roughly? Can you give me kind of some general?
Well, remember, the county judge is not judicial. It's more administrative. We have over 40 departments in Tarrant County, over 40 departments, about $1 billion budget. And so you have department heads. And so when they put their whatever they want to get together, whether it's, you know, the JPS thing, of course, you got some appointees you put over there, but you oversee the budget for JPS. So you're overseeing 40 budgets for 40 different departments. But
I
at the end of the day, they vote on, you know, the county judge, they vote on what needs to happen or budgets, things of that nature.
Sure. So you kind of sit over the mayor over the thing. You don't actually
court,
see people that come for you, like cases and any kind of like that. Okay.
No, sir.
When we hear judge,
so, yeah,
that's the first thing I would think of, you know, just out of not knowing it. Okay. Well, good. Now,
absolutely.
Go ahead, James. I'm definitely out now. Go ahead.
Yeah, commissioner's court is totally different. You know, you're just you and the four commissioners, and you basically run the county. You're like the mayor of the county. That's a good analogy.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Byron, if you were elected, would you call for a – audit?
An audit for the election?
An audit for Tarrant County.
Oh, heck yeah. The stuff I'm looking at now, yes, of course. I'm going to give you one specific example. One thing I want to look at is back in 2019, there was a we received a grant for roads for seven bridges in Dallas County and Tarrant County. It was for seven bridges for $8.8 million. And I got a funny feeling we have a road and bridges fund in Tarrant County. And right now I think it's at $11 million. So, and what I noticed from my previous running and my research I've done, they would normally, I'm not saying they did this, but I got a funny feeling they put that money in a general fund. Because when you put it in a general fund, you can spend the money as you see fit. But if that money was earmarked specifically for bridges, seven bridges, particularly seven bridges in Dallas County and Tarrant County, I'd like to know how much of that $8 million did Tarrant County get, and where did it go? Did it go to the Road and Bridges Fund, and where is that? I should be able to go a line by item, and I should be able to find that if we split a half with Dallas, $4.4 million, I should be able to find that with no problem. And anyone that's if someone's listening, if anyone's in an office, they should know exactly, department heads should know exactly where that money went. And this is 2019, so I'll have to look at, I'm not in that seat, but once I get in that seat, I will be able to, again, look for transparency when it comes to dealing with those particular funds.
Now, Byron, speaking about that, isn't that something you could secure through a FOIA request?
FOI, Freedom of Information Act?
Correct.
I could, but I also can look at the 2020 budget to see was there an infusion of money come in. I'm not sure about the FOIA. I have to do some research there. I should be able to be honest. So I'll have to look at that. But what I've had problem with FOIA is people don't want to release stuff. They don't want to release it. So they'll make up something, whatever, but take you through the ring around the rosy. But once I'm in that seat, I know exactly what I'm looking for, and I know the exact time frame. And I don't have to wait 3 weeks to get it.
Well, speaking of budgets and bridges, I was wondering, do you have any thoughts on the Panther Island project?
That's a waste of money. It's a waste of money. That money could have been better spent on our infrastructure, and it could have created more middle-class jobs. It could have, that's all I can say on that note is I think it's a waste of money. I don't know what they were thinking with that project, to be honest. And the fact they've already dumped $1 billion into it, and I just don't know what – I don't understand what that was all about. And I'm on the outside looking in. I don't want to be on the inside of that project at all.
Okay, Byron, do you have any events? Go ahead.
Well, that particular infusion of money did nothing to make Fort Worth better. it did nothing for the community, for it, especially in a pandemic. So, no.
Now, Byron, do you have any events coming up you'd like to plug?
Yes, I have one. I'm going to be at the Rotary Club in Hearst Tuesday at 12 o'clock at a luncheon. I'm going to be at the VFW. I'm going to be at the American Legion at 12 o'clock the next day. Tuesday, that's Wednesday. And I have another, that's the VFW in Halton City. Not the VFW, the American Legion in Halton City. I'll be there for a luncheon. They'll have another event on the 18th at Six Stone, which I've been invited to attend, which is it's a volunteer. They're doing it with special things for volunteers there. I've been invited to attend that. And one thing I'll let you gentlemen know also, we were supposed to have more forums, but what happened is a lot of candidates have declined to go to these forums. I think people didn't know who I was before this thing started, so they were kind of showing up willy-nilly. And once we start talking about issues and things of that nature, they're now starting to decline to be on stage with me, I feel, particularly because they were coming before. And now it's all of a sudden they don't even want to do interviews for the news, for the media. And so because the media wants to give us equal platform. But they're now declining any type of interview where I guess I'm going to be involved.
Okay, so I guess with that being said, you're not going to be doing the forum at Texas Wesleyan on the 21st, I believe?
I have something on the 21st. I don't know if it's at Texas Wesleyan, though. One second. Let me go find my calendar real quick here.
No, you're fine. There should be there's going to be a 30-minute debate forum that's going to be up there for the candidates on both sides of the aisle. Is that correct, Bob?
I mean,
yeah, that's right. I got my ticket for it. I'll be there definitely.
What day is that again? What day is
it's
that?
It's on Monday the 21st.
No, I haven't got any feedback on that at all. No,
okay. Brian,
no one has reached out to me.
Do I have your email, Brian?
Yes, Byron, byron.bradford.
Okay.
@gmail.com.
You might have sent it to me or not. I've talked to so many people or not, but what I can do is I can forward you the invitation there if you want it.
That's fine. You can go ahead and forward it to me. I'd definitely love to go.
I'll send it to you because I think it's going to be big. It'll have a lot of people there in Texas, so it'll be a good place to be at. So, yeah, okay. I'll do that tomorrow. I'll get that sent over to you. Okay?
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Don't thank me. Pay me. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I give you a good cigar.
Oh, that's fine. Very good. Very good. Yeah.
Well, Bobby, we're running down to the end of our hour here. What do you want the voters to know about you before we leave?
I just want the voters to understand, again, I'm a guy that understand what it is to be a public servant. I understand what it's like to be fair and impartial. I've done it my whole life. I'm not bought and paid for. I don't have all these endorsements. I don't have a lot of money. I'm using money out of my pocket because I believe in this cause. Yes, it would be nice to have that infusion of cash to help get the signs out or to get the commercials, this, that, and the other. But at the end of the day, I don't owe anybody anything. All I want to do is make sure the citizens of Tarrant County get the best representation possible. And I think at this point in time, I am the best candidate on this ballot to represent Tarrant County as a county judge.
Hey, Brian, do you have any, after this race here, if you do not make it across the border line there, do you have any expectations of running for anything in North Richland, in Richland Hills, like council or mayor or any other thing like that? Any expectations?
Well, I've had people approach me about some other stuff. I just want to get this behind me first, and then we'll go
through. Sure. Well, I was burning up another minute there of time. It just came to mind. I'm sorry. But yeah, very good. I know this is the most thing to stay your mind focused on instead of looking at something else like that. But it was just one other thing I was just kind of curious about too there. But okay, go ahead. And I'll let James close it up here. We're down to getting close to the wire here and that. So.
No, Bob, you just want to remind everybody about next week?
Yeah, we can just, that's what we just did at the beginning of the show, too, that that we'll have Tim O'Hara on, 7 to 8, and 8 to 9 we'll have Aaron, I can't pronounce his last name, running for lieutenant governor and that, so, and that. And then there's some exciting things coming up next month, I believe. We'll have some topics, too. One is like our police oversight committee. That's cost. I just got the numbers from Open Records. It looks like it's costing us $500,000 a year for zilp. Nothing. That department does nothing. It doesn't even mention the police officer's name. All they can do is take information and recommend it to the council and mayor, which that's what we do ourselves, or we used to. They took our right of way to speak, so we pay someone else to speak for us now. But and also the person that's heading that up, they brought her in from Cincinnati and paying her $172,000, three times more than the average police officer. You know, that's one of our topics maybe next month, as soon as I get the rest of the information on. So, but anyway, topics like that that's going on in our city, and where's our money going to, and then we'll be getting ready to gear up for May's special election. I'm calling it special election, but District 4, but the council member that, that's stepping down. And also, like you said, James, the way it lays out, if he doesn't get his seat on Congress, he can jump right back in the race for his council seat. So, but anyway, that'll be some of our topics coming up and who's running. And we'll see who comes on the show. That's one thing about this show. Candidates that don't want to come on here and talk to the people, I really don't. That's the first clue. I'm not saying they're not qualified because they don't come on our show. I'm just saying that is a clue that maybe you want to question some other things about them, too. Let it send a flag up at least, because most candidates do come here and want to talk to people, and that's what we want. So that, and, you know, so. Okay. The caffeine's wearing off now. The caffeine's wearing off, okay? So.
You're good.
Anyway, Brian, we appreciate you coming on tonight and spending an hour with us here and that. And if you get across the line there, we expect you to come back.
I will, definitely.
And then if you get in the seat, we definitely expect you to come back then. That's when we find out when we made the right choice. I'm afraid, you know, nowadays the only way we know when we really got it right is after they get in and how they act then. And so anyway, that's what we'll be holding you to, you know. We'll see if you pass those tests down the road, okay? And I'll let James close this out.
I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Brian. Okay, now let James close this out here.
Sure, Byron, I want to thank you for coming on, and especially I want to thank you for your 29 years of service of our country, for keeping us free, as I said in the beginning. I truly and greatly appreciate that. I wish you the best of luck with everything going forward, and I want to remind everybody in closing here that early voting starts tomorrow and runs through the 25th. Also, if you plan on doing mail-in voting, the last day to apply for a ballot is this Friday, the 18th. And we'll have the election coming up here at the 1st of March. Until next week, folks, this is James McBride signing off. May God bless each and every one of you in the great city of Fort Worth, Texas. Good night, folks.
Good night.
Thanks, sir. Bye-bye.